Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. If you asked what makes Jack Welch a great businessman, Tiger Woods a great golfer, or what made John Lennon a great musician, chances are that most people would give you the same answer: talent. Conventional wisdom says that such high performers are gifted with skills and abilities that the rest of us just don't have. But according to Jeff Colvin, author of the new book, Talent is Overrated, our ideas about talent are deeply flawed. He joins us today on Edgewise. Jeff, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Jeff, what do you mean when you say talent is overrated? Why is the conventional wisdom about talent wrong?
When you look at these great performers, these really world-class performers like the ones you mentioned, what they do seems so far removed from what the rest of us do. We can't see any path that would lead us from where we are to where they are. So we think, you know what, there must be just some incredible natural ability, some natural advantage they had that most people don't have. And that's got to be the explanation. And the reason I say it's simply wrong is that there happens to be a large body of scientific research on this now. Most people aren't really familiar with it. I wasn't particularly familiar with it until I found it in the course of researching a Fortune article, and I found that it was A, very substantial, B, incredibly interesting in my view, and C, really important because it changes the way we think about everything we do in our lives.
In your book, you describe an interesting study conducted by Cornell University that called into question the idea that high intelligence, as measured by IQ, is a predictor of high performance. Can you give us a quick recap of this study and tell us what its implications are?
It was a very interesting and kind of fun study because one of the things we all think of is either the great performers have some specific natural ability or at the very least, they have incredible brain power that the rest of us are just not blessed with, high intelligence or great memory or something like that. So here was a study that looked at people at the racetrack, people who were bettors on horse races. Now, you may think, what has that got to do with me? I think actually it has an awful lot to do with what everybody does in business. You look at all the information you can get, which is never complete. You estimate chances, odds, probabilities, and you decide where to put your money. It's an awful lot like management. What they found was that if you looked at people who were either really good at handicapping or really not good at handicapping, they chose representative samples of each. What they found was that in IQ, they didn't differ. There were people with low IQs who were in the high-performing group. There were people with very high IQs who were in the low-performing group. They had the same number of years of experience at the track, but the conclusion of the researchers was, whatever it is that IQ measures, it doesn't measure ability to do these kinds of tasks extremely well.
You say that high performance isn't determined by talent, but by something that you call deliberate practice. What's deliberate practice, and how is it different than the kind of practice that average performers undergo?
The researchers came up with this term, deliberate practice, but I caution people that it is not really what most of us are doing when we think we're practicing. When I go out on the driving range and hit golf balls, the way I do it, which is the way most people do it, hasn't really made me any better when I'm finished. Real deliberate practice is specifically defined. It's activity that is, first of all, designed to make you better at whatever it is you're trying to get better at. And most of what we do isn't very specifically designed, but in deliberate practice it is. It's always designed to push you just beyond what you are able to do at that moment. Just beyond. There's always a struggle here. It is always pushing you just beyond what you can do. Second, it can be repeated at fairly high volume. There are ways to do it over and over and over. C, there is feedback. You are always getting feedback on how it's going. Now, in some activities, you can get your own feedback. If you're trying to hit a golf ball onto a spot that's 120 yards away, you know whether it hit there or not. But in business especially, it takes judgment. In business and a lot of other fields, you need a teacher, a mentor, a coach, somebody to help you with all this stuff. That's what deliberate practice is. If you do it for hours a day, every day, for years on end, you will become an extremely good performer.
Right. Once again, it really is thoughtful. It's very focused, and you're very engaged in the feedback mechanism.
You got it. That's exactly right. Most of what ordinary folks do in their realm of practice, sports or music, and heaven knows it, business, isn't designed by anybody for any particular purpose. But just as you say, when the real great performers are doing it, A, it's been carefully designed, and B, they are fully immersed in it mentally, so much so that the researchers found across fields a remarkable consistency that people could maintain this deliberate practice for only a few hours a day. It was so draining mentally that you could only do so much of it, and it seemed to apply no matter where they looked.
Jeff, one of those elements that go into deliberate practice, and you talk about them at length in the book, is that deliberate practice is designed specifically to improve performance.
Right. In other words, somebody has to look at your current level of performance. Now, maybe you can do it, but maybe you need somebody from the outside to look at your specific level of performance.
Are you making an argument for consultants here?
Well, I'm making an argument for mentors, mm-hmm. teachers. They can be consultants, but really, you need somebody to look at you, assess what your current level of performance is, and then figure out what the next step is for you. This is a real skill, because it means don't perform within your current range of ability. That's never going to make you any better. At the same time, don't reach for a goal that is so far ahead you have no way of getting there right now. It's always finding something that is just beyond what you can currently do, and then working on that over and over and over. By the way, when I say this is very demanding and even draining, what I've just described is almost a recipe for failing. Because if you are trying to do something you can't quite do, you must be making a lot of mistakes. That's the only way that these great performers get better. And it's the only way anybody gets better. So it's not, frankly, all that gratifying, at least at first. Nobody really enjoys falling down, metaphorically or physically. And yet, that's what the great performers do day after day.
I would think that there are just so many variables involved in so many of these more complex tasks that this deliberate practice allows you to isolate variables.
That's exactly right. That's a very large part of the design of the practice activities. But you can't always practice in business the way you can in sports, in a setting where there's nothing at stake outside the real game. In business, we're sort of always in the real game. So, for example, suppose you're going into an activity where you have to make a sales call or something like that. You can say not just, I want to make the sale. You would say, okay, what specific part of my performance am I going to focus on today in my sales call? And you would identify one very well-defined thing. Then you'd work on that. It's exactly to your point. You are always looking at something to isolate and work on specifics.
In a recent column for Fortune magazine, you argue that the current economic crisis is an ideal situation for learning how to improve your performance. Why do you think that is?
It does sound funny to say that there's anything good about the current economic crisis. But if the essence of great performance is deliberate practice, and the essence of deliberate practice is pushing yourself just beyond what you can currently do, then circumstances that will test you, that will demand abilities you haven't had to demonstrate before, are actually exactly what you are seeking. Good companies figure out ways to test people by putting them into different assignments, but that will only work for so many people every once in a while. Here's a situation where everyone has an opportunity to be tested, to be forced to demonstrate abilities that up until fairly recently, they didn't have to demonstrate. So I really think there is a great opportunity if we will stop and think about exactly what new abilities this situation demands from each of us.
Jeff, we keep hearing over and over again how businesses are facing a global war for talent in the near future, the aging baby boomer population, smaller Gen X pool, backfilling a lot of the stuff in place now. How do you think businesses can use the ideas behind your book to win that war?
I'm a huge believer in the importance of the war for talent. I'm passionate about it. And there are a couple ways that companies can use the ideas in this book to help them win the war for talent. One, they can realize that it's in their interest constantly to be developing people according to these principles, which means putting them into situations where they have to push beyond their current abilities. Now, companies need to realize, and the best ones already realize it, this is an investment. It costs now, but it pays off bigger later. Because when you take somebody out of a job they currently do well, that's making a sacrifice for the company. If you put them into a job where they don't have much experience or ability, that's also a sacrifice. And some companies don't want to do it. The smart ones realize that that's an investment that pays off big down the road. The other thing that companies can do is realize that every employee has an opportunity to improve and develop themselves every single day if they go into their day with these principles in mind. And so a lot of what they can do is simply teach employees about the principles and explain to them that there's a development opportunity in everything they do during the day. That can raise what you might call the talent level or the ability level in a company very considerably.
Jeff, I'm just wondering, given the energy level that you have about this subject, what makes you such an optimist?
Because it's clear that it works. When you examine the great performers, it's clear that this is the best explanation for how they achieved their incredible levels of performance. And when you look at the rising standards in virtually every field, the really remarkable way to which everybody is performing at a much higher standard than they did a year ago or 10 or 20 years ago, whether we're talking about sports, music, all kinds of business, everything else. This is happening because the best performers apply these principles. So we know that it works, and there's just a great opportunity for companies and for individuals to apply these principles themselves.
The book is called Talent is Overrated, and we've been speaking to the author, Jeff Colvin. Thanks for being with us today, Jeff.
You bet. My pleasure.
Remember, we'd really like your feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.